Hey everybody, welcome to Pittsburgh Comics Podcast number 34. We're going to finish up our best of 2000 or best and worst of 2011. I don't think we have any scheduled guests this week, sadly. So we should be able to finish our list, and then we'll move on next week to other fun stuff. But we'll go around the table, introduce ourselves. I'm Colin McMahon, owner of Pittsburgh Comics.
Joe F., 20-year veteran.
Justin Pinto.
Matt Little.
Jim, new member.
Rookie, be nice to him.
Jeremy Dan.
Adam Russell.
Okay, that's our group. I'm sorry, calling in from Cleveland?
The iPad.
Oh. Nick Borelli, yeah.
Not at? Okay.
What do you mean at? Oh, you mean if you were to find me on Twitter? Yeah, that's how you do it. At Nick Borelli.
And calling in from San Francisco.
Sean Wheatley, a.k.a. Left Coast Love.
So many jokes?
Yeah. Okay. Well, we left off at favorite new writer as he called in, so we'll see if we get some magical calls in this week. Next one is favorite new artist. That's where we left off. So, who wants to start?
Let me start.
It's somebody that you were introduced to this year. They might not necessarily be new, but they're new to you.
I think we had came to prominence this year, and I don't think any artist got more prominent than Giuseppe Camuncoli, friend of the podcast.
No.
He experienced a rebirth since he did get a lot of DC work in recent years, but at Marvel these past couple of months with Dekent Dark Wolverine and Amazing Spider-Man, I think he's really
hit the mark.
He
actually called. He said you've been pronouncing his name wrong. And he is no friend of our podcast.
Well, it's actually funny because I was bagging a big run of Hellblazer recently and didn't realize how many issues of that he has done lately or in over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But I actually had a bad experience with Giuseppe this weekend, so we'll get to that later. He did some fill-in art on a book that I wasn't expecting, and quite harsh. It was quite jarring.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Who's next?
All right, I'm going to go, and you can make fun of me for saying this. May not be new, but he was new to me this year, Francesco Francavilla.
I thought you were going to say Mike Diodato. I'm sort of like, no.
We know who you're talking about.
Yes.
He may have been around, but I discovered him this year, so it counts.
I think he did a cover on every Dynamite book that came out today.
He did covers on DC, Marvel. That man is a machine.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's one of the most prolific artists and one of the best artists.
And I think he still qualifies as fairly new. I don't think he did a lot of DC and Marvel.
Did you guys see Cap and Bucky last week?
Gorgeous. Good. His we were talking so much about Scott Snyder last week, but Jock and Francesco Francavilla made those detective runs that much better than they would have been. Like, if it had a mediocre artist, we probably wouldn't be as much in love with it as we were.
And their styles are very fitting, especially with that James Jr. style story.
Yeah. But yeah, I think 2012 is going to be a good year for him.
This is Colin. I have two, actually. Not trying to cheat, but one was Chris Burnham, who I hadn't really heard of before, but when he was filling in on, was it Batman Incorporated?
Batman.
Especially the Man of Bats issue
Pittsburgh
was
native.
One of my favorites. Yes, he did a signing over at another store not that long ago. But I really like his work. I know he's very quietly-esque, but I really liked his work. And the other one that I got introduced to with the New 52 is Ben Oliver, who's been doing Batwing. And I realize a lot of people say a lot of his work is, there's a lot of computer work in it, which I can see, but overall I thought it was fresh and different.
It's very photorealistic, which I normally don't like, but I like his.
Yes.
Soft.
He does pretty well.
Like, there's something about the and it's probably an issue of the colorist. Whoever does his colors, even though it's like kind of rendered and photorealistic, they do like something with the colors that makes it softer and not as jarring. It looks.
I just remember reading it, and there was an ad in it for Superman 1, and just the looking at the two pages were just so completely different. But I just really like that. Nick, what do you have?
You know, I had the submarine sandwich, Giuseppe Camuncoli as well, but I also had, and again, another guy that wasn't new this year, but I think really rose to prominence and really stuck out in my mind was Marcos Martin.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I just look at those pages and I read the book, which is on top of it, it's like Daredevil is an amazing book, but I just pore over those pages. They're just so amazing. And they're fluid, but at the same point, they look like, you know, pieces of art. He's really engaged me more than, you know, anybody else this year.
I remember when I first saw him, and he did some Spider-Man, and he was going against the Shocker, and the padded costume looked padded. It had texture and everything to it, and he also was doing Ditko fingers.
Yeah.
That I loved.
The texture is really it. I mean, I think that's what makes him really different, is that these costumes look, you know, new again, but at the same point, they're very true to, like, a Silver Age look.
Yeah, it's not just, naked person, and they just painted lines on him.
Right.
And another person just like him, though, is one that I chose, though, is Rivera.
Paulo Rivera.
And it's very similar art style.
On Daredevil, yeah.
But that was, that was one, too, that I had.
I'll jump in there with Nick's vote for Marcos Martin, because he's been around with Amazing, but probably came to prominence just getting center stage with Daredevil, when I love the way the art almost harkens back to something Bronze Age, Daredevil's golden years, and just the way that it doesn't stay contained in the panels.
Yeah.
And then as far as somebody that at least I've been introduced to new this year, the name escapes me, but the artist on All-Star Western for Jonah Hex.
Oh, was it Moritz Hat? Yeah.
Moritz Hat.
He's been
around. I really love that.
Yeah.
And see, I hate that.
You didn't know it was a Western.
Along the lines of Marcos Martin, something he's done in the past that I didn't realize, I read it, but I didn't realize he did the art until we started talking about all this. He did Doctor Strange, The Oath, with Brian K. Vaughan, probably about...
He also did Batgirl Year One, I think you had mentioned the other day, too.
Yeah, so those are two things. And I remember reading those, loving the art when I read them. But, but mine is also in the new 52. It is iVampire artist Andrea Sorrentino. And that... She was my number two, I will say. Francesco Francavilla was my number one with Matt. But I think she also deserves some discussion for her iVampire work, because I've talked about that book a lot. I like it. And I think half the reason I like it is I didn't think it would be a book for me. It's a horror book. It's vampires, two things that I don't normally enjoy. But as much as I love the writing by Josh Fialkov, I think her art in that book definitely goes a long way also towards the enjoyment. It's like dark and moody and kind of almost like an abstract, dreamlike feel to it, like with the use of the colors, and just her line work is really sharp and clean and... You know, just very, it draws you in and is the perfect fit to the story that he's trying to tell. So,
I was going to try to jump in front of you and say Ben Oliver.
Oh.
When you said you had two.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
They're both Batman related.
Absolutely. I mean, Ben Oliver, just like you said, it's kind of a very different type of art. Not really, kind of looks computer generated, but didn't I read something that it's not computer generated? Doesn't he pen most of it, or is it computer generated?
I don't know.
I thought I read, or somebody here had said that it isn't computer generated, and it looks very much like...
Which book is he now?
Batwing.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I'll just echo everything Colin said.
Is he new? I don't know. I feel like I've heard his name before, but I couldn't even tell you any books I've read of his.
Sean, what do you have?
All right, I'm going to go with Ryan Stegman, and he's been around for a little while, but it seemed that last year with his work on She-Hulk, and I also see him in the Marvel House ads that he's going to be doing the Scarlet Spider book that's coming out.
Number one was very, very good, actually.
Oh, did that already come
out? No, it didn't come out yet, but I read a preview of it.
Got it. I had the pleasure of meeting Ryan a couple of years ago at a Comic Geek Speak. I think it was like episode 300 taping. And he did an amazing sketch for me of Plastic Man as the Golden Gate Bridge. And it's one of my favorite sketches here in the house. I think he's got a really clean line. I don't know if they always put him on the best stuff. I think he's part of that DeviantArt group, DeviantArt maybe. But I was really happy to see that he's going to gain some prominence coming up with the Scarlet Spider book. And then a Dark Horse pick, not Dark Horse Company, is somebody who's actually been around for a really long time. But since I don't really read Spawn, It was fun to see Greg Capullo come back this year on the Batman book. You know, doing something other than Spawn for the past.
And he was doing Haunt too, but yeah. Nice to see him back in the mainstream.
Yeah.
Because he started out in the X-Books.
So if we're going to say new, Ryan Stegman's my guy, but resurfacing outside, you know, resurfacing, I'm going to go with Greg Capullo.
Okay.
Can I pick an extra one?
Sure.
I don't know if he's new or not. J.H. Williams, or not J.H.
He's not new.
Freddie Williams the second. Is he new?
He's just like J.H. Williams.
Freddie Williams? No, he's been around.
He's been at D.C.
He was doing a lot of D.C.
He did Robin.
He posted a bunch of commissions he's done on Twitter over the past couple days. Oh my God, some of them are just amazing. But there was one, it was Batman on the cover of Dark Avengers, which was completely ironic, but the art was fantastic. So, and I also got a commission.
Did he put your commission on there?
He did not. This was all stuff he'd done recently. This stuff was good enough that I asked him for if I could get a second one.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. And Ryan Sargent's not here, but he also picked Francesco Francavilla.
Sarge.
So... Okay, next.
Hey, FYI, if you're interested in just taking a look at some of Ryan's art and you don't want to look at She-Hulk, he did two issues of The Incredible Hercules, 129 and 130. So.
Cool. Okay, next up, comeback book. And basically a book that either you used to like and had gone way off the rails but has come back around, or a book that's relaunched after being bad for a while. So I'll start with this one, only just to give you an idea what I mean, is Daredevil's my pick. I'm a big Daredevil fan, full run of Daredevil, and it went totally off the rails with Shadowland. And when they announced it was coming back, the only thing that it made me happy was the writer and the artist, because I didn't like what they'd done to the character, and I didn't know how they were going to save the character. But Mark Waid's done just an unbelievable job with the book. The artists have done a great job. And we'll see where it goes from here. I'm hoping it stays good. I didn't like the last issue, so I'm hoping this crossover with Spider-Man that's coming up gets it back on track.
I have a good one, too.
Okay.
Daredevil.
Hey!
No, yeah, I'm the same boat as you. Like, you know, big Daredevil fan. I've read the entire, you know, series. Unlike you, I don't have the entire series. I have...
Come on,
you know,
man.
The big chunks, but... Daredevil is one of my favorite characters, if not my favorite character. And what Bendis and Brubaker did in their runs is they basically put him in places that were so crazy that the other one had to, you know, really dig deep and deal with it. And Brubaker was able to do that after Bendis' run. And I really don't think that Andy Diggle was able to do that after Brubaker's run.
I also wonder how much of that was editorial, though.
I agree. Probably a lot of it was. I don't know how much of it was like trying to wrap up a lot of stuff and to try to cause excitement around Daredevil by, you know, giving him his own event. But that thing went on forever and it just drug and it was just boring.
Yeah.
That said, Waid has done one of those. It's almost like a DC move, like when. Like if Jeff Johns or somebody takes over a book, he doesn't throw out the continuity. It's there, but at the same point, you know, it's clearly a new direction. You know, it's like the character's in a different place mentally, but everything happened before it counted. It's a really interesting way to take on, you know, where this character was put and where he has to, you know, dig himself out of. Just like little sly notes to the fact that, you know, he was... he's become almost a completely different person, and everyone's worried, you know, how long it's going to last. And I think that makes it these really cool adventure superhero stories, just a little tinge of, you know, darkness, of knowing that, you know, he probably should be dealing with this in a different way.
Okay, who's got something different?
I do. Aquaman.
What?
How could I not throw love at
Jeremy
Aquaman?
Jeremy likes Aquaman? I'm shocked.
Well, it's not important that I love it. It's that everyone else seems to love it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, obviously, I think I said last week, I talked at length about it, but just as a comeback book and comeback character, I think that Aquaman book is one of the ones that came out of the new 52 that's been a pleasant surprise, because it's, you know, Aquaman, everybody's like, oh, God, Aquaman. And, You know, I know people are also starting to get weary of Geoff Johns and his writing, but it at least seems, you know, we've done a lot of talking off the air about how Johns is starting to get like Bendis, and this common theme for both of them is they're writing everything and seem to be the creative, you know, focal point at the company. And it's just, they're doing so much that, you know, it's easy to tell now which projects have really captured their interest. You know, I think Moon Knight right now is one for Bendis that he's really interested in, and Aquaman likewise at DC definitely seems to be one that, you know, I think Johns is spending a little extra time with to you know, he's enjoying writing it, and it comes across when you're reading it. And it's just nice to see Aquaman played straight.
Yeah.
And not be the angry, bitter, you know, character that he'd been.
Yeah, under Peter David's run.
Yeah.
So I kind of got an off-the-wall one. Okay. Action Comics.
Yeah.
That was my number two.
I mean, other than Paul Cornell's run of the Lex Luthor chase for the Black Ring Power, that book has been terrible in the 4 years I've read comics. I've been back in comics. And it's great to see it be good again. Moon Knight was my second choice, because that's been terrible for as long as I can remember as well. And Bendis is just doing great work on that.
And echoing Jeremy and Matt's, I would say Justice League probably had one of the biggest comebacks. From somebody from talking to you about Justice League and how you said this should be like a pillar of DC's universe. And when you've got like the C-list characters that they had in it, and you know, they would throw in like maybe Nightwing if you were lucky would be like the big time star that they would have, but really taking it back to like getting getting the Trinity back involved and getting everyone in again. And a lot of people have said it's kind of slow and it doesn't seem, we're on issue 5 and doesn't seem to be going anywhere. But just in terms of comeback books, I don't think any book was selling as poorly as it was and had kind of like this resurgence of popularity. Yeah. I mean, I guess when it's the only book that comes out in a week, you know, it helps it really gain new readers, but...
Yeah, one thing I hope DC learns from this new 52 is that, you know, all the times that we ever talk in the last, like, 20 years of Justice League being good, like Grant Morrison's run, Wade's run, and even there was a lot of hype with Brad Meltzer's post-Infinite Crisis. Mm-hmm. But what do all those have in common? They have the big 7.
Well,
you know, it's just
Dyer that didn't want him or want them around. Right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that his whole
point? It's not
that hard. I don't know if it was his point. It just kind of went that way.
Wasn't it after 52 that he said he didn't want the big 3 to be prominent for a while and let the other characters shine?
Well, they did that in 52. But clearly, that's what we all want from Justice League, if you give that to us.
I mean, Trinity even sold, too. I mean, if you guys want to pretend that happened.
Yeah. But I
don't think you have to have the Big 7. I don't think it has to be, like, just those people. But if you look at pre-New 52, who was in the Justice League, I mean...
Yeah.
The names of the people escaped me. Was it, like, Gorilla Bob or...
Congo
Gorilla, whoever it was. There was some gorilla in it. Like,
it was a bunch of Teen Titans.
I never thought about reading it.
Speaking of friend of the podcast.
And I have to say, if that was your only exposure to James Robinson, please read other stuff, because...
Read Starman.
I really thought he was a terrible writer from reading the Justice League stuff he wrote, but reading Shade and some of his older Wildcat stuff, the guy's a good writer. He just had a bad, I don't know if it was bad editorial pushing a team on him or what, but he's a good writer.
You didn't like Gorilla Bob on the team?
Come on. Gorilla.
Oh, sorry.
Whoever it was. Some Close Gorilla enough. Was on the team. So we've established that. Sure.
But like he tried to use a lot of classic Justice League villains and it just didn't work. Like Eclipso and Starro.
Yeah,
and they just didn't. He just didn't do it.
You can't
right.
put a bunch of people that don't carry their own book together and hope it carries a book.
Yeah,
I don't
sleep dark.
That's a good place for some secondary characters to supplement.
Yeah. I mean, but I think you need somebody
like Hawkeye and Avenger.
I just don't think you can take a bunch of characters that could, you know, that are like B and C list characters and hope they carry. But you need somebody that has like an A-list character. I mean, you need a Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman. You need somebody.
Batman. They had Dick Batman in it, but I think it was so far off the rails at that point that you could have put the whole Trinity back in.
And that even dates back to when like McDuffie took over, and that all got.
They try to have representatives of the big three in there. Yeah. If they can't have Bruce, they'll have Dick. If they can't have Clark, they'll have Carl.
Yeah, they did have that. They did have Supergirl and
yeah,
something.
But it's like still
things,
yeah.
Like Matt said, maybe got so far off the rails that it was a lot of stuff with DC. I mean, a lot of the stuff was
what
Vixen, old and stale.
Vixen was team leader of the Justice League.
That's when
itself.
I stopped reading. Yeah,
but
yeah, Sean, what do you have?
Okay, I got I started caring about the FF again last year. So, and since they did reboot with FF number one, I think that qualifies for the category. I'm not a big fan of Spider-Man being on the team full time. I did think it worked with the story. I thought he was the logical replacement, at least in the short run, for the Human Torch. And I'm probably one of the very few people that actually kind of liked the goofy new uniforms. Like I said, it had been a very long, I mean, I read Fantastic Four as a kid, and then I kind of got away from it. It seemed like the stories were very stale, and then last year was the year I got back into Fantastic Four up into the end of Johnny Storm, and then kept going with the new FF book.
Cool.
Good Adam? Pick.
Mine isn't Image Jeremy, it's Aquaman.
All right.
Joe F?
I'm going to go with Green Lantern, New Guardians, Kyle Rayner. Glad they kept Kyle Rayner around. I love legacy characters. I love Kyle Rayner. He's my Green Lantern, and it thrills me that he's still in the DC universe.
And he has arguably the best of the Green Lantern books right now.
Right on. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, from our friends who cannot be here, comeback book, Ryan has The Flash. Of all
like
the new 52, The Flash is one of the books that embrace the core values, modern ideology, momentum of the reboot the most. In 2011, The Flash went from being about a depressed guy who runs fast, struggling with meaning and story and plot, to being about an upbeat young hero who's constantly finding new uses for his powers. And I have to agree, I didn't like the last series. I found it boring. I found the art flat, so I was not excited when I saw Manapul was going to be drawing it and writing it, but I think he's really blossomed. I think he took a lot of J.H. Williams stuff and incorporated it into his
issue.
Book. I haven't read the new one yet, so...
Some of the layouts in there are really cool.
I've got the two core X books.
Okay.
Because, which would now be Wolverine and the X-Men and Uncanny, because that's the book, that was my gateway book. That's the book I started with and stuck with through thick and thin, and there were some really bad times with that book. I liked Utopia when it started, and then it just seemed to go on too long. And that final issue of Volume 1... where Cyclops says, I finally graduated, that just, like, kicked everything in the high gear again. I'm like, this is good. And then to read Wolverine back in Westchester, it's like they got away from the concept of either the school training or the team, and now they're back with that. You've got Uncanny, which looks like they're going to be proactive. So those two books... I was thrilled to see, especially the move back to Westchester. It's like the X-Men are back the way they used to be.
Cool. I agree. Yeah, Wolverine and the X-Men has been a real pleasant surprise.
Can it last?
We'll see. You know, I read a preview of the first one post-Botulo, and it was okay. I was very worried about Nick Bradshaw's art because all I've seen is the covers he's been doing, and I haven't liked them. And there were some spots inside where the art's a little...
Is that change in art permanent?
I don't know. Who knows?
Nothing's permanent.
Yeah, nothing's permanent. I don't know if it's just an arc or what it's doing, but the last one, the next one is
good. And
then
I just want to throw out there, I mean, everybody's sort of a Daredevil, Shadowland.
Oh.
I'd like to think that was just a bad what if in the 90s.
Let's just pretend Shadowland and Cry for Justice never happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the
publisher gets a mulligan.
To see Animal Man and Swamp Thing back in publication. Yeah. I think that's...
Colin, this is Sean.
Yeah.
In California. You mentioned that although we want to focus on the best, that we might also hit on a couple of...
Oh, we're getting there. We're getting to the most disappointing, yes.
Oh.
Yeah, we're going to get there. Don't worry. Sean Sisson sent me an email with some of the stuff that he wanted to talk about since he's playing hockey. And his favorite comeback book was Wonder Woman. He says the book has been a series he's been looking for. It's already made Wonder Woman more accessible than she's been in years while going deeper into the mythology. And I agree. That book had just been chaos ever since they really relaunched it, where you had Alan Heinberg came on and was supposed to do an arc and left in the middle, and then... They had, I forget who her name, a big writer, novelist, was taking over.
Jodi Picoult.
And then it tied into Amazon's attack, which just, and it just, it's been a chaos. And then they gave it to Straczynski, which just really drove it into the ground. So I agree. That one, I had high hopes for that one with Azzarello. So, and I think it's really done well.
And
I've really liked it.
If you only read issue one, pick up the other.
Keep going,
three.
Yeah.
One was weird and
but it set everything
not representative.
Up. No. Yeah. Number three was excellent. And the last one was really good, too. Okay, now, Adam wanted this category, so I don't have anything to say on it, but favorite all-ages book. Well, actually, no, I do. SpongeBob. I was talking about that earlier today. It's been a huge seller for me. Like selling, like, Spider-Man numbers.
Wow.
Yes. So.
Do you get people that come in with their kids and say, hey, we saw this cartoon. Do you have
absolutely.
This book?
Yes. If I could have more Pokemon, if I could get Dragon Ball Z books, people would be happy. But Sonic sells big. Like I said, SpongeBob, Strawberry Shortcake.
I get two or three of them every Sunday.
Yeah.
Well, I've been picking up Strawberry Shortcake and reading that with my daughter. We've been enjoying that book. But for me, my favorite all-ages book was The Return of Richie Rich this year.
Remember, you weren't excited about that first issue.
Well, because they weren't very clear about what was, whether stuff was new stories, old stories, recolored. Unfortunately, in my early days, I really wasn't paying attention to the Richie Rich continuity. So it was very difficult. I just found that to be frustrating. They took a lot of time and effort to put that new book out, and I thought it would have been nice to have at least identified what was, you know, what was brand new and what wasn't, because they had a mix of stories, which is the other thing I like in an all-ages book. I like that there's short stories as opposed to one long one. Because, again, reading to my three-year-old daughter, sometimes even a 22-page comic book might be a bit much, but an eight-page story goes very, very well.
You've read the continuity. Is Casper the ghost of Richie Rich? is he, like, you know, as they say in The Simpsons, did he commit suicide and become Casper?
That I don't know, but I didn't know enough. I didn't know enough about the older stories to be able to visually look at the book, because I know they had taken some old stories and recolored them, so it's kind of hard for me to tell whether that was brand new or just a recolored old story. But that's not a huge ding.
I do like the idea of, you know, like every week, like a segment of the show dedicated to like what's going on in Richie Rich's continuity. Sounds great.
So I'll throw one out there. I don't read it all the time, but Batman Brave and the Bold is awesome, although I think it's ending. I know the cartoon's ending. I don't know what the book is.
The cartoon ended.
But there was an issue a couple months ago that had every Robin in it, and it was just a great – it was one of the best Batman books of the year.
Which, in fact, it even included Damian.
It did.
Which was funny.
And it had Stephanie and Carrie.
Oh, Carrie Kelly, cool.
Yeah, which, it had every – and then there was a panel at the end that had all the Batgirls in it hinting at a future episode. One I didn't know was Kathy Kane. I never knew she was a Batgirl.
Yeah. She was the first... Wasn't she a Batwoman?
Yeah.
No, that's Kate Kane. I don't know. Yeah. But anyway.
That book looks good just on the guest stars.
Yeah.
That they introduce.
And it was written by Shawley Fish, who's writing the back the...
Action backups.
Yes.
I got a few.
Okay,
but,
this is your category, man.
But,
your time to shine.
One's a collection, actually, that I like that you sell here in all ages. But... one was Batman Brave and the Bold. The other one is Tiny Titans, which also had Damian in it not too long ago. Actually, it has all the Robins, but it's kind of cool. It's just a fun book to read, a bunch of little shorts, basically. And it's kind of neat on how they use the characters and how they link them and what they do with characters you wouldn't expect, like the principal being Mr. Slade, which is Slade Wilson, or Wilson, what is it, Wilson Slade. I don't know. It's just kind of a fun book. Also, Batman Brave and the Bold, it kind of matches the whole, as Matt was saying, it matches the whole the cartoon show really well, but it's really one of those that I think is for everybody. I mean, anybody can, I think, get into it. If they like the cartoon, they can get into the cartoon as well. So, The other thing that, and you sell it here, I know, I got one is a huge collection, though, is, and I've been wanting to mention it for a while, is the Best of Archie that Colin sells here. It's like, what, $10? But it's actually just the whole history, basically, of Archie. Since the books,
is that decade books, you know, where they have Archie in the 80s, 90s, are those the ones?
No, they have that, but this is one big, like, 500-page big Best of Archie from the beginning up through, I don't know how current, but, you know, stories all through the ages.
I think it's fairly current. I think it stops, like, as this more modern stuff is, but it's just kind of neat. Also, in between each, like, section, they have a little, almost like a summary or an introduction into how they created this part of the book and stuff like that. But it was kind of neat. The first part, they explained the history of why it was created and stuff like that. But it's all in all, it's just a really cool collection for just $10, for something to read. So
I remember when I first ordered that, I ordered 10 of them. I'm like, I'm not sure about this, but I think I probably sold through all of them by now.
Well, you actually talked me into it because you were sitting at the table over here when you were setting them out, and you were like, "This thing's kind of neat." And I said, "Well, for $10, it is kind of
suckered in on the easy. It's kind of neat.
It is though. It
can work on the shelf, man.
But it, if you look at the book and how much it's actually in it, though, it's a lot of actually material that's in the book.
So we've. A couple of us were talking about this offline over the past couple of weeks, and maybe, Colin, this might be interesting to hear your take. So now with Archie really becoming more mainstream with, you know, Kiss and Obama and gay characters and...
Gay Wedding came out today.
And fantasy stories about whether he got married. Can you really call Archie an all-ages book anymore?
That's a good question.
Yeah, you know, that's true. Yeah, it's probably not as much for kids anymore. I mean, I
don't know. I would say what modern kids are able to take in is probably different than what kids were able to take in 10 years ago, 20 years ago, etc.
But I also think Archie isn't for the kids as much anymore. I mean, not that it isn't. But I don't have kids coming in buying Archies. I have parents buying Archies. I have grandparents buying Archies that maybe they share with their kids, but I think it's more they're buying it for themselves because they remember Archie. And I don't want to say they're writing the books for an older audience, but I think they're, you know, most, you know, six-year-olds aren't going to know who Kiss is. They're not going to understand really the concept of two guys getting married. So, no, I agree. I don't know if it is really a kid's book anymore. But there's other ones. I mean, then you have, you know, Betty, which is definitely a kid's book. Betty and Veronica and Jughead, which are still goofy, where maybe in the main Archie book they're trying to do something a little different.
But is it one of those things, though, that you're getting customers in here that actually put it on their pull list?
I don't have anybody pulling, other than the Archie Kiss ones.
Or is it something that they just come in and grab on the shelf?
It's much more,
like, hey, do you have an Archie book? And they just want to read one of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did that Oni Press Yo Gabba Gabba collection come out last year, or was that late the year before? I can't remember.
I don't remember. But you like that one.
Oh, my God, I love that book. And I see that they're going to have a Yo Gabba Gabba book for Free Comic Book Day. So I'm very excited to see that keep going. I really like that they brought real comic talent. I mean, folks that draw the books that we like, to do those Yo Gabba Gabba pieces in that collection, along with the folks that work on the different animation pieces and stuff for the show. I thought it was a really solid collection at a good price.
Yep. But yeah, most people who don't have 3-year-olds won't understand the book at all and look at it and go, "What?" It's like, well, you haven't spent hours sitting watching the show. Okay, everybody have their say on all ages?
No.
No, go ahead, Nick.
It's no longer a book anymore, and I'm sad about it, but Darkwing Duck.
It might come back from Marvel.
Pardon?
It might come back via Marvel. I think it's just done with Boom.
I agree. I think it will come back via Marvel, and from what I've heard, the people that were the team that was on it looks like that they would be cool to do it at Marvel as well. But it was a fun book. I mean, I don't know if a lot of you guys ever watched that show. I have every episode on DVD. I love that show. And they really captured a lot that was fun about that. And there was still a lot of, you know, in-jokes on superheroes. And so, yeah, I read that. I read that forever. And I would have also said Tiny Titans.
just because that I've read that since issue one, and yeah, Slade's the principal, and that's pretty funny, but Darkseid's the lunch lady, so that's even better. But yeah, it was when I was in New York, like the one thing I definitely wanted, because I collect original pieces that I commissioned for artists of Daredevil, and I really wanted an art Baltazar Daredevil that he did for me. He did the yellow costume and crayon, and it looks really cool. Nick, so I just like his style a lot.
Yeah, it is neat.
Pogs.
Nick, Pogs. Is there something you don't collect?
Dust.
I'll get back to you on that.
Wait, do you collect Pogs?
I have some Pogs. Actually, yeah. I'm looking at some right now.
Really? You just happen to be looking at them?
Yeah, they're the Superman Pogs from 93. And it was I have an uncut sheet of them, believe it or not. I just didn't have any place to put it.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's Eradicator, Cyborg, Superman, Steel, and Superboy.
I have those.
If it's Superman Pogs, do you need, like, a Kryptonite Slammer?
Oh, that was like, oh, okay, we're moving on.
Mail away for
hey, that so was Pog, funny.
We could have a side podcast just called, you know, by Pog.
Okay, you guys Skype it and record it on your own time.
On, huh?
I think Pog Collector.
We can't afford to lose the people we've gained. Okay,
maybe we just did because they're like, oh,
they might be.
Pogs, what?
Now I'm listening.
Okay. Moving on. Favorite miniseries or event? Who wants to jump on this? Everybody knows going to know what mine is. So.
I know
one's Schism.
Schism, okay.
That's mine too. Go for it.
Were you really going to go
fight?
Absolutely.
Oh, man. What do you like about Schism?
I'll jump in, Colin. Okay. Up until the very end of it, I was really, really enjoying the Red Skull miniseries this past year. I love the art in that book. I thought that they were actually true to some of the history of what was going on in Germany leading up to Hitler's rise to power. So, for me, I enjoy both the history part of it. I thought the story was, I thought the ending was a little weak and contrived, but overall, I was looking forward to that book each time it came out. I thought those were some of the best covers, along with the Darkwing Duck covers last year, the Batman homages.
But different covers, yeah.
Those were amazing, but the Red Skull covers also were off the hook.
Can I just say that I love that mini too. I love the Magneto Testament, so I was looking for more of the same. But I felt like a very bad person every month when that book came out, buying it and bringing it to the counter and taking it out. Like, just the imagery that was on the cover.
Did you read the interview with Axel Alonso, and he was talking about, like, how people kept giving him weird looks because he had, like, Mein Kampf and all these, like, Nazi history book sitting on his desk for a couple months doing the helping out with the research on that, and like how he felt awkward every time.
I mean, they're brilliant covers.
They are.
And very, like, you know, other than the Red Skull, they look, you know, something right out of a history book, but man.
Did someone at the table mention Schism?
Yes.
Go for it.
Well, I guess you got that pick too, but it set the stage for the rebirth of the X-Men books, and I don't know why it surprised me so much, but for Wolverine to sort of be the pacifist in the story surprised me. I mean, yeah, he's like, the kids shouldn't fight, and Cyclops is like, no, if we're almost extinct, everybody's gonna that difference in the two kind of just really took me by surprise, because Wolverine's the guy you go to
for violence
in a fight, when you need a violent reaction.
I felt like it was
played up well.
I felt like it was the great culmination of a lot of underlying plots that had been building in the X titles for years, you know, where Wolverine has kind of taken a backseat to Cyclops and followed orders, but you've always kind of gotten the sense that he was just waiting to explode, you know.
They had a scene where they kind of showed that, where I guess they went to the UN and they're he's with me. I'm Cyclops, I'm the boss, and this guy's my backup.
Right, right. And the other thing about it is that they developed Wolverine as a leader in X-Force, almost like he was ready to take over, like he didn't need to be the soldier anymore.
Brandon number one,
they developed him as a personality that was ready to take charge. You know, they took him out of that berserker role and developed him into a leader.
And as unlikely as he would be to be running the school, it's brilliant because he's always nurtured a kid. He's always had an unofficial kid sidekick that he showed a different side to, where he was caring and understanding, mm-hmm. and not just a wild animal.
Yeah. Well, I think the interesting thing about that miniseries to me was I still don't know which side I would take.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because there is that side of me that thinks, all right, kids shouldn't fight. You should protect them. But what would you do if you were down to 200 of your race? Because you really can't make that decision. It's like people saying, oh, I wouldn't do that for $1 million. If $1 million was sitting in front of your face in $100 bills, there's a lot of things you might do that you don't think you would. Just like, if there's 200 of your race left, what do you do?
That's probably the first story since Civil War that actually made me stop and think, what side would I take? And I couldn't come up with just a straight answer.
Oh, definitely Cap.
I enjoyed it much more than I thought I would. And I love what's come out of it. The only thing that really disappointed me about Schism, though, is that they had spent, it felt like the last 10, 15 years building Scott and Logan's relationship, just to have it kind of crumble away over something that was kind of not flimsy premise, but kind of a slightly strange premise. I understand both viewpoints and they're both valid.
But it's what Jim said is he's always had the unofficial sidekick, right? So that's right. Heidi. He had Kitty. He had Jubilee. There's one more I can't think of.
CD, the little android.
But now he's got this ID chicken, right? He's taking under her wing. So it's very in character for him to be overprotective of the young female X-person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are they an X-Men if they're still a girl?
They are.
Yes. But I've enjoyed her in the world we're in the X-Men, just going, oh, it's okay, we'll just kill everybody. You know, it's okay, we're just a bunch of murderers. Well, she's maintained that.
It's interesting to see her, because I think they're playing up that side of, I killed a bunch of people, now I have to deal with it mentally and emotionally, which is...
But they're not really addressing it.
I like that she dealt with it by saying, well, we're all a bunch of murdering monsters, right?
Were any looking forward to that many?
Really? We look like it.
I was.
I mean, too.
I was, too, because the X-Men was something.
But the prelude that made me not want to look forward.
The prelude was awesome. I remember out of context. out of context.
Each book was a history of the character, and at the end, they're looking out at the window.
Yeah, what's on
the way? It was a little bit of history of the characters, but as far as a story, there wasn't anything there.
Schism was great until you read Schism and went...
Yeah. I never even read the last issue, so...
I gave up.
Well, you missed the best
issue. What decision were they making?
I dropped from 3 to 4.
You and your selling comics.
Thinking of it as Prelude to Fear itself, because that makes much more sense.
Yeah,
the main miniseries definitely turned out to be a big, pleasant surprise, because Prelude was awful.
I love
With Prelude, I might
give it a try now.
You have to look at Prelude as a prelude to the story, not an essential part of the story. It doesn't start Schism. It sets you up to enjoy the characters with the personalities.
But
the personalities that they are being presented in the Schism.
The problem with Prelude is, what in Schism would have been the huge evil that was charging?
That's what I'm saying. It's not about the huge evil charging.
There was never a time where Scott and Logan could have had that conversation or had that whole time, because people were already making choices at that point. Why is everybody staring out the window?
It doesn't fit into continuity. It's not about continuity.
Right, it's
let it go.
Not.
Into your story.
All right, so I'm going to change topics or change books. I'm going to pick something very not kid-friendly. Caligula from Avatar by David Lapham. That book is so ridiculously over the top. It's amazing. I mean, it is just...
Is that a mini?
It's like a five-issue mini or six-issue mini. You a questionnaire and said, Matt, if I could write a book, what would you put it? I mean...
It is just Roman debauchery in total overload. I mean, you just can't get any more debaucherous than
what
this.
Is it, Bob Guccione's movie look tame by comparison?
Yeah, I mean, what a fun book.
I never saw it.
All right, I had to plug a small press guy.
That's fine.
Because everybody else is going to say Schism and Flashpoint.
Who's gonna say Flashpoint?
I was gonna say Flashpoint, but I'll leave that for Colin.
I got it too.
So. I'll take the biggest event, the New 52. Because it is an event. It really is. I mean, every book tells you it is. It says right in the corner.
It depends. How long are they going to put New 52 into the corner?
Well, then
of their
it qualifies as a mini after a while. 25 issues. Perfect.
But
so we go on forever to become a publisher.
Second wave.
Yeah. I mean, I read a lot of books that I would have never read before if it wasn't for the New 52. If it wasn't for starting over, I mean, I was reading like seven books. Reading slash buy. Seven books a month. And now
I
read
slash
buy.
Discount, right?
Like 25, 30. I don't even know what I do anymore. I mean, it's just all of a sudden, reading the New 52 really took me into a lot of books. I would have never read iVampire. I would have never read Justice
League. And you're still adding.
I would have added, yeah. I would have read Animal Man or Swamp Thing. Or I mean,
and call it what they sold Fifth Prince of Justice League if it wasn't.
And you know, if you were still.
It's one of the best covers, though. I like that one.
The
a lot.
Sketch variant on the fifth print. Who needs to wait for the fifth print?
If you were only still getting seven books, you want to be allowed on the podcast. But also, you know, the worst thing
everyone's
is.
Everyone's allowed on the podcast.
Well, the only. Unless you fold your comic books.
That I have an issue.
Unless you fold, yeah. I think
magazines.
Joe F.
I
just
know.
Folded the cover back on a
I
book.
I think they should lose
magazines.
Their...
And everybody their, just was, oh!
I think those type of people should lose their comic book veteran membership.
Veterans are battle-scarred.
Okay, what do you got, Adam?
So we're folded books.
That was a good too, so far.
Oh, yeah? Good segue. Talk it up.
Yeah. Let's see where it goes.
Fearless.
Yes.
I can't say it's horrible. Like it has a good story, but I want to know if it's going to where it's going to go to.
If it goes to,
if it does, I might drop all my Marvel books because that's like a slap in
the
face.
If it follows the rumor off of Bleeding Cool, I would be very disappointed.
Yeah, but it looks like it because
that it is going to be introducing a half black Nick Fury child.
To be more like
basically,
the one in the movie.
The main character of Battle Scars, who's this brand new character, the rumor is it's Nick Fury's.
Because there's a big chance I'll stop getting my Marvel books, except for Spider-Man.
Hey, so did you ever think of this? If DC relaunched everything, it was the New 52, Marvel, then it'd have to be the New 616.
That's probably about how many books they tried to come out with. It wouldn't surprise 616
issues broken up between six books.
Yes, all starring Hawkeye.
Exactly.
My favorite was Flashpoint, but not for the reason Matt thinks.
He's a hater.
No, the reason I like Flashpoint is because it literally brought the excitement back into the store that we hadn't had in a while. You had people coming in each week. What books came out this week? Which issues came out this week? And that's really followed through with the New 52, where people come in to see, you know, which of the 52 that they're interested in came out that week.
But it wasn't the books. It was the buttons.
Well, it was the pins, and that—I mean—that certainly it was almost a joke, and people laughed. But I think people did like getting the pins. It was neat. It's like, oh, I get this, and I get a pin. Okay, you know, it wasn't a big thing; it was a little throwaway thing, but it was a little something.
Throwaway,
yeah. Who threw away?
Throw in.
Some of your competitors. Those were $4 a button.
That's true, but it generally brought the the excitement. You know, what? Oh, when is this Batman coming out? Oh, Aquaman's this week. Great. Which
there
we
only one person saying that.
Well, right, but Jeremy was excited. But but it's really come back. You know, now we're getting into the fifth issues, and people are still excited. You know, they come in and they look, and they're like, "Oh, great, action's this week!" And you know, when's Batman? Oh, that's in 2 weeks.
How
great.
How many people ask when Hawk and Dove is?
Not many, but you know what?
But if they gave a fan,
you have 52 choices, which I think is great. Whereas with Marvel, you can say, "Hey, what is Captain America not coming out this week?" You know, because
where's he coming out?
So
twice?
I like that there's a schedule. I think that's done wonders.
We'll see how long they stick to it.
It's been 5 months.
Hold on, were they giving away pens or pins?
Pins.
I don't know. The Indiana accent just.
I have a Chicago accent, anything.
Joe, we all laugh with that until we heard about the folded comics thing. Then none of us can pick
up again.
All right.
Okay, so that was my... not in it. Like I said, not so much the story, but just the excitement.
What it did.
That I think was real, especially because it came out of nowhere. There was months of hype, but nobody paid attention to it.
We all thought it was going
to
be a lame Flash miniseries.
Yeah, and it caught everybody by surprise. I think that's what was great about it.
Now I'm
going
to say why I liked that. Why?
What? I'm waiting. You like the nude Lois Lane. I understand.
You just look like you kicked his dog.
No!
Why?
I did. I'm sorry. Why did you like it, Adam?
I don't know anymore. I don't know. I just really liked it. It's one book that reminded me of how House of M was. It was very similar to House of M, how it was structured. And I just really liked how you could come in, you know, get your event book, and you can you don't have to – it's not flowing into every other book. And that was my big thing with it. And with when Marvel did that with that with House of M, you could just get House of M, read that event, you'd be all right. You could do that with the minis that came out with it. You could, you know, add on minis. None of them cross totally into the book.
The thing they have in common is they're both
alternate
Elseworld stories.
And that's another
universe stories.
Yep.
But I don't think they
dismiss all of continuity and just have fun, which every publisher would do that every year. Just
but then again, I don't think they have to structure the story like that just because it's an alternate reality book. And I think that's a good way of structuring how they did it. And I really think a lot of, and this is, you know, this is going to come up later on, but I think that was a lot of what, with Fear Itself, too much crossed into too many other books. And it bored me with my other books. Not necessarily it bored me with Fear Itself. I was just so sick of it just existing because...
You didn't like the interviews?
I wanted to read my Avengers story, my Secret Avengers story that I was really enjoying. Disappeared for
what? Abe Lincoln
for 3 months.
No, that was the Fear
Itself.
The one,
but that was in Secret Avengers storyline.
Yeah, but that's what
right.
I'm
but he's saying he liked what was going on before Fear Itself. Yeah,
no,
really.
What excite me is they were in Secret Avengers. They were introducing the I can't remember the name anymore. But this new.
It was the Shang-Chi storyline.
Yeah,
it was the America. The guy
it's
who was
so
the first
long.
Captain America
Orphan
guy.
Maker.
Yeah. Which also, which really does feel like Ed Brubaker style writing, as much as Captain America isn't.
Nobody
remembers. But now it's gone.
That book's gone off the rails.
But it's okay because Hawkeye's taken over.
And it also seems like a weird way.
As Theodora leaves and it goes downhill. Yeah.
Right? It also seems like a weird time for them to be reintroducing a team when I forgot about who the old team was. So why jump into this?
Yeah.
So
I think the point to jump on is where Remender relaunches it after the Ellis stuff. Because I think. As
but that's
as,
a problem.
But see,
as long as he can ship on time.
But that's I think that's a big problem though that Marvel does is they expect that their people are going to jump back on.
But the problem, that's part of the problem is where you had an audience, you had people that liked the book who have now wandered away because of Fear Itself and the Ellis. Are you
going
to get them back? Or are they saying
job and our job to some extent is to get people excited
about
this?
Right, but part of the problem is they've moved on to something else. And
but,
now you got to try to bring them back. They've
that,
already been burned once.
But you
it's
should
hard
be able
to get
them back. Anybody that's an Uncanny X-Force or Venom fan to at least pick
sure.
up.
No, but there's only so
issue.
Much though, to a certain extent that he can do that. If Marvel keeps messing that up, there's only so much he can actually sell as well.
I think ever so slowly that the Avengers brand has actually started to become a turnoff. Like, you might have people not getting it because, you know, like, all of this stuff that
Hey, but we have a new title coming. So.
Yeah. You know, people, I think people, the, like, Avengers fatigue and, you know, that Remender book might actually be, it might be a harder sell because of the title.
And I hate to say this because I don't mind most of his writing, but dear God, can we have a different voice besides Bendis, please?
Yeah,
he's only
going to
be writing 3 of the books,
no,
so it's okay.
After AVX, he's off.
I think he's
lost. He's just starting Avengers Assemble. He's got to be writing that. He's supposed to, or whatever.
He's going to be off all of them but that one.
Oh, okay, because I heard he was...
I actually think he's just lost Avengers. Like, I think he's doing so much
Lost
Avengers.
Lost Avengers. That would be a good title.
That's one Lost.
Wait, they'll bring that back.
But, no, I think
Jack and Hurley.
But I think any creator on any
Lost
book...
Avengers?
Oh, that'd be good.
Dark Lost.
Any book with any creator that's been... Lost. How long has he been writing Avengers since Disassembled, which was...
Yeah.
He's been writing it so long now his Avengers books
almost,
are starting to, like,
it's
mold into
years.
One, like, blob.
Any book, if you had the same
New Avengers
on Batman
Avengers.
For 10 years... It's going to get old and lose its direction.
Oh, I agree.
But that's up to editorial. Yeah,
he needs
to let
go. Well, he's the CCO or...
He's not.
Architect.
No, he's an architect. He probably made
up that
term.
Doesn't that make you like God?
I don't know. Nick, what do you got?
Well, do you count Regenesis as a thing?
Sure.
It's an event.
Okay, then I'm going to go with that, only because it has... really set a status quo that seems very, very fruitful for a lot of different X-Men stories that can go concurrently And you sort of have a feel for where these books are going versus the last couple of years, which I've enjoyed. But when you put together 200 random mutants and then each issue has a different, you know, a few here and a few there, you never really felt like any of the books had their own voice. And post-Regenesis, it seems like they've established each of these books, these X-books, with very definitive voices. Wolverine and the X-Men is fun in ways that Uncanny X-Men isn't, but I really enjoy both books. I'm scared of the Uncanny X-Men team. They seem like a bunch of, you know, JLA-style, you know, huge superheroes with sort of a dark leaning, whereas Wolverine and the X-Men reminds me of Morrison's X-Men run, where anything can happen. It's a little on the crazy side, and it there's more of a fun element to it. And that's across the board. New Mutants seems to have a very distinct voice. Boy, what else? There's
X-Men, Vampire X-Men, where they're chasing vampires.
That's got the voice of fighting vampires.
I was excited when I saw the cover of X-23 had her with Jubilee. So we're squeezing more vampires in.
Well, Jubilee's been in and off that book because Gambit's kind of mentoring Jubilee right now. Teaching
that's
her
a book that's going under anyway, so whatever.
Teaching her how to live with her dark side.
Right.
Do you see Marjorie Luz taking over Astonishing X-Men?
Good pick.
Astonishing right now is this current storyline is actually fun.
Agreed.
It's too bad. It's the best fit in a while.
It's a book they've just driven into the ground, though. So.
Pax off.
Yeah, that book has had no direction, although even, again, the best I've read in a long time in that has been under the Regenesis banner, so...
Yeah, well, that confused me, because I thought that meant it would be in current continuity, but it's not, so I was very confused. Is it?
Yeah, it's Cyclops getting plucked into a different timeline, but it's the post-Schism 616 Cyclops, I mean, in as much as... It's in continuity, but it's in a different dimension.
Okay, because I got very confused when he was talking to Storm. I'm like, well, that clearly is in current Storm, yet he didn't seem fazed by it at all.
Yeah, he was. I guess he was confused, and he said that even then.
Okay.
But they said that she was in Wakanda, so this is the first time he saw her, maybe, after, you know, a brief trip or whatever. He was confused. Okay. It was an alternate Storm. But, I mean, X-Force, again, great X-Men book. That really hasn't had a low streak, but... every single one of these X-Men books seems to have its own voice. And before, although I thought they were, you know, pretty good, there was just, I couldn't tell the difference between one book and another.
Yeah.
Did you say Astonishing hasn't had a low streak?
No, X-Force.
No.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say Astonishing stunk from when Whedon went
since
off.
Whedon left it. They just
I liked Ellis' run.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
It came out in 6 months. Yeah. It would have been great, not I hear you. 2 years.
Okay. Sean, what do you have?
Uh-oh.
We lost
him. He left him.
He had Red Skull.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Now let me get to the...
I'm here.
I forgot you already chimed in.
I go on mute so you don't get all the background noises of the tranny fights in the alley here and the sirens and stuff.
That sounds like another podcast.
Okay. Sean Sisson's pick was Spider Island. And let's see... Wow. Ryan picked Zombie, the one by John Rosum and Fraser Irving. If weird was a genre, this book would be filed under that. Solid writing from John Rosum and stylish art from Fraser Irving kept this 6-issue mini at the top of my pick. Let's hope this book resurfaces at Vertigo or in the New 52 soon. I enjoyed that one a lot. I love Fraser Irving's art. So it was just weird enough to keep you interested. I mean, not just weird enough. It was very weird, but...
It was too weird for me.
Yeah, you gave up on it, but that's okay.
Hey, Colin, there was another, and maybe it wasn't my favorite, but something I did pick up throughout the course of the year was that Infestation from IDW that crossed over into all the different IDW books for a couple of months there.
Okay.
Did that sell well?
No.
I enjoyed it because it exposed me to IDW books that I hadn't been reading, so...
Yeah, I had hoped it would cross over, but like people, you know, the Ghostbusters people bought the Ghostbusters ones, but they didn't branch out into any of the others.
So, that's too bad.
Yeah, overall, it did not do well.
Was it a good story?
I don't know. I didn't read it.
They use the popular trope right now of zombies, So there's a zombie infestation, and it's crossing all of these different parallel universes. So there's a small group that's trying to, you know, take care of that. But within each of the G.I. Joe books, the Star Trek book, the Ghostbuster book, and the other one escapes me right now, they had their own story. So
Transformers?
Oh, Transformers, right. Yeah. That was actually the weakest of all of them. I thought the Star Trek one was actually the best because Bones actually was the one that kind of had to figure out how to combat the zombie infestation and was able to help turn some people back, which is one thing we don't normally see in zombie books, right? Once you're a zombie, that's it. So
rarely are zombie stories set in the 23rd century, so
that helps. Sean, you'll be happy they're soliciting Infestation 2 in previews this month.
Well, I don't know if I liked it that much, but that's why I was asking Colin. I saw that they were soliciting another round of it, so I was just kind of curious, well, what were the sales behind that to actually warrant another run at it?
Yeah, not good for me, but maybe good as a company.
Fair enough.
Okay, next thing. I know this might have confused
people. Said Gates of Gotham?
What?
Nobody said Gates of Gotham?
Yeah, I thought that was odd, too.
Yeah,
John. I left it off because I was like, "That's too obvious."
No, I just thought Flashpoint was bigger for me.
I think I'm just saying, just in this group.
No, but Gates of Gotham was very good.
I wasn't thinking of minis. I was
trying to think more events, but yeah. Gosh, nobody said Fear Itself. I'm shocked. The next thing, what are you most looking forward to in the next year? Even just things you hope happens, not necessarily any events, because they haven't given a whole lot of stuff away as to what's coming up. Like for me, I picked the Swamp Thing Animal Man crossover. Those two books have been real breakout successes from the New 52, and it was fun. You know, I'd read about it earlier, but hearing Scott Snyder last week say how much fun he's talking with Jeff Lemire. About doing it.
Be ABX.
Me?
Yeah.
No. I have a second one. I'll come back to you later. And just looking, Sean Sisson also picked that one, the Dead World Animal Man Swamp Thing crossover. Ryan, believe it or not, Multiversity. He's most excited about that.
Shocking.
I know it is shocking. Okay, I'll give away my other one. I think they're going to announce that Hawkeye is a mutant so that they can have him appear in every X-Men book as well as every other book in the Marvel Universe.
That's
You're being
be
sarcastic?
I am being sarcastic, but when I read Cap 6, and it was more a Hawkeye book than a Cap book, I was a little surprised at just how many books Hawkeye is in right now. It's getting ridiculous.
It would make sense if he was a mutant.
He has that mutant power of accuracy.
Is that what you were talking about when you said you had a problem with the newest issue of Cap?
No. I'll get to that one with my most disappointing title. But the Cap 5, they had an artist change in the middle of the book, which was it was jarring. It was you had very nice McNiven art, and all of a sudden you have Giuseppe Camicoli's really heavily inked dark art in the middle of a page, and it was just very jarring.
I've got three things, but I'm going to go with the least likely to be picked somewhere else, and I'll come back to the other two. Crossed Badlands.
Okay.
A bi-weekly crossed every 2 weeks. We're going to get
the big event starting in March, I think.
We're going to get more crossed, and it's going to be Ennis and Laugham, and I forget who the third writer was, but it was somebody good. So I think, you know, the other two I think other people will say, but I think that's what I'm really looking forward to.
I'm going to go with Watchmen, too. I think that
Alan Moore just rolled over.
I think that they're going to put top tier talent on this, and these are characters that we've only seen a little bit of before, and new stories are going to be awesome.
Is it a prequel or a sequel?
Prequel.
Cool.
In theory, nobody's officially said anything.
It probably doesn't really exist. They're probably just messing with everybody.
Yeah, there wouldn't be a whole lot.
Has it been officially announced, or is it still a rumor?
It's unofficial. It's unofficial. But like the rumored talent is J.G. Jones and Andy Kubert. But like if you are familiar with J.G. Jones, J.G. Jones loves like the Dust Bowl era. So if it's Watchmen prequels, you know, from the 50s, from the 60s, or the 30s, or the 40s, that's right up his alley. I mean, think about Doc Savage. Okay, he was doing those covers because he just loved that character. He loved that era. So to put J.G. Jones on Watchmen prequels is like a match made in heaven.
Yeah, and Darwin Cook. Did anybody read Justice League Dark last week?
Yes.
Because there's a scene where Constantine, in an overcoat and gloves, is eating cold beans at a table. It was just, it's like, okay, this is coming. They're just starting to throw little teases.
I completely out missed there. That, but oh, now that you said it, I remember it.
Yeah.
There are times I wish this were a video podcast. That was one of those times.
You like
I think
that?
The fact that Joe has his dress pants.
You guys got me. Yeah. You guys got me excited. What do you want? Do not hate me.
Nick, what are you looking forward to? AVX.
A versus X. I mean, it's got to be A versus X.
I got to decide if I'm an Avengers store or an X-Men store. I don't know what to do.
Are you going
to
have a midnight party?
Oh, I probably will.
Awesome.
I got to see what's involved.
Can you tell me the fucking lot again?
I'm sorry, yeah. What, Nick?
And everybody's going to dress up as either an Avenger or an X-Man?
Yes, that's a requirement.
Everybody has to dress as Hawkeye.
I'm dressing as Batman again.
Then he will be everywhere.
But yeah, I
mean, no more Hawkeye!
But which Hawkeye? New costume?
It's the new Civil
costume?
War.
I hope it's something. I'm worried about event fatigue, and I hope it's good, because I don't think Marvel can afford another lackluster event.
I mean, I think everybody's going to be kind of excited for it, though, because it does seem like it's kind of one of those things that looks kind of exciting.
After
but,
reading the first two issues of X-Sanction, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit excited just to see like what they're going to do with this, mainly because of House of M, how it kind of connects with Disassembled and House of M. It seems. It doesn't say yet, but it seems. So, I don't know. That's kind of why I'm excited. But my other one...
The Young Avengers miniseries really got me, you know, excited for this book, too.
Is that required reading for...
Children's Crusade?
We don't know.
Avengers versus X-Men.
You know what?
They say it is, but honestly, no one really knows.
There was an ad last week that said it's leading into the biggest event of 2012, which they keep calling it Avengers versus X-Men. They keep calling it the biggest event.
The last issue's not coming out till July.
The biggest comic book event ever.
But actually,
it should be out in February.
I actually agree with Nick. I think I'm most looking forward to this because... At this point, it can really only be one of two things. A spectacular success or a colossal failure. I don't think there's any middle ground. It's going to be the best thing Marvel's put out since Civil War, or it could be the thing that kills Marvel Comics dead. I really...
Come on.
No, I think after
Fear
itself...
You mean completely dead?
I think it could have hurt them a lot.
Did you see the sales figures from December?
Wouldn't it be great if it...
Or November? Yeah. They've gained 1% back and barely behind DC.
If you triple ship all your books, you can get ahead.
We
double ship one book.
Wouldn't it be great if it was like a
November?
November.
Or December. Whatever sales number just came out last week.
They shipped more than just one book.
Defenders. What else did they double ship?
No, you mean overship. I'm saying double ship is we got two issues of Uncanny X-Force, two issues of Captain America. That's what they're saying when they're saying double ship.
Oh, I thought you meant where they gave you the free extra stuff.
There were a lot.
Mm. Well, you know. Could be a whole franchise reboot.
You haven't even got the Venom yet.
Marvel could be starting back to number one.
But I will say that I'm excited about the event, and I'm hoping it is good. Because, you know...
It's coming on Tuesday and not a Wednesday.
Yeah.
It's coming. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, the premise is one of those things that if done well, it could be a really fun story and invigorate Marvel. But... It feels like...
They have enough writers on it.
It just feels like, from what they've said, they're, like, throwing every egg into this basket.
Yeah.
Hoping it's going to be amazing.
Are they...
Did somebody else do that last year?
And it worked. But so, if it hadn't worked, we'd probably...
They're 1 month from being back to their old sales figures.
No. Not a chance. No.
Every article I read said they are one to two months away from being back to the same... Market share they had pre-supply.
Market share, maybe, but not sales numbers. Their numbers have to be way higher.
Doesn't matter. Market share is what counts.
No, sales is what counts. If you're selling double all across the line and the market share is up double.
Selling double.
Well, Marvel's shipping double.
A high tide raises all boats.
Yeah, yes. But they're not back to where they were. They're much higher than where they were.
That came out of nowhere.
I'm a man of mottos.
We'll give you that one.
It'll be interesting to see.
Hey, Colin, this is Sean. So
yes.
For
for next year, two things I'm looking forward to. I'm hoping Spider-Man's going to kind of pick up Amazing Spider-Man, that is, with the end of Spider-Island and the return of some of the traditional Spider-Man mythos kind of being returned to normalcy without giving too much away. You know, that relationship with Mary Jane looks like it's coming back, and they're starting to backpedal a little bit. There's some holes in Mephisto's spell, and with the spider sense back. So I'm really actually looking, I'm looking forward to Spider-Man getting a little closer, getting back to more of the core stuff that I really liked about the character. And then the one thing I'm hoping or that comes out next year that nobody's talked about is Old Man Logan 2.
Oh, I hadn't heard about that.
What?
So back in June, it was from Bleeding Cool, Mark Millar had already pitched to Marvel the sequel to the Wolverine Old Man Logan arc. So I really enjoyed that series, and I would definitely pick up if that same team is put back on that book. I think there's a lot more stories to tell in that universe.
Absolutely, yeah. I'd love to see Wolverine sales back up to where it was back then.
Well, if it's Millar, I'm trade waiting.
Yeah.
I've decided anybody.
Well, I think that was also a McNiven issue. McNiven seems to have problems.
Late. I mean.
Yeah. So I think it was a combination of the two.
Superior and.
How were the sales of Wolverine before that?
Good, but it was Civil War, and then it led into.
Because Jason Aaron had been writing it, right? Was it Get Mystique right before Old Man Logan?
Yeah, and then it went into Old Man Logan, and it was doing well.
Was that Jason Aaron? I thought that was Rucka.
No. Jason Aaron was Get Mystique. Rucka started the Wolverine.
Yeah, Rucka was way back.
19. Yeah, 1 through 19.
But no, it was strong, and then when it ended, it just was totally bad.
Adam, you were saying something about, and related to AVX is what you were looking forward to.
Spider-Man in the Ends of Earth. I've been waiting for this story actually since they reintroduced Doc Ock, and being that he's sick and everything, what's happening with that? And they haven't really got into it. And since they've reintroduced him, I think it's been maybe a year and a half, maybe more than that. So I've really been looking forward to that story, and that seems where it's going. So, but yeah, that's mine.
Okay, now
I can't believe nobody said one of the two things.
I haven't gone.
I'm
looking forward. Well, I mean, like, the thing I'm most looking forward to now is Batman 5, since it's apparently the greatest thing Scott Snyder's ever written, according to him. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm just looking forward to he said it was an 11-issue mini, and I can't help but think, like, the Black Mirror was 11 issues, and all I hear is great things about that. So I'm really looking forward to the Court of Owls and how it finishes and where we end up with, because every time we read something, everyone says how great it is, and then Scott Snyder quickly tweets, well, if you thought this was good, I think next month's better. Now he's either, like, the greatest salesman ever, or, like, we're getting into something that could
and
be
And all he has
really,
to do is say that,
really
that simple
good.
Thing. This is better than what I learned the last
it's
week.
Just, to hearing him talk, like, you can't pick it up on Twitter, but hearing him talk last week, he's genuinely excited.
I can't wait. And that's the one thing I look forward to more than anything every month.
Oh, I know. And I agree. So ever since he said that, like, I've been waiting. I'm, like,
2 more weeks?
Still waiting for it. Somebody asked me today. They were like, about, you know, what's your favorite DC week, basically. And I was like, just Batman. He's like, well, what else comes out that week? I'm like, I don't know. Batman comes out. I might only get one book, but that'll
Justice
be it.
League. Come on.
I've got realistically... I'm looking forward to the Brubaker's Winter Soldier book. Anything he does with Bucky, I enjoy.
Thank you, because that was the one I was going to say. Now, here's my request for Marvel. A Brian Wood Miss Marvel series, please.
It would be good.
Drawn by?
Becky Cloonan would be nice.
Frank
Cho. Frank Cho,
yeah.
Just a Brian... Well, anybody Miss Marvel, but Brian Wood Miss Marvel would be awesome.
Uh-huh.
Oh, did you guys read the end of DMZ?
No.
Last issue, last week.
I got 2 trades to go.
Unrealistically, I'll say Miracle Man. Just whenever they're ready.
That's never going to happen.
They might read.
Thanks, Nick. What else? You said...
Yeah, he picked Winter Soldier. Okay. That was the one I couldn't remember when he said.
What was your other one? Didn't you say...
Okay, now we're going to take a turn to the dark side. Woo-hoo. And not necessarily... somebody said worst. I don't want to go into worst. I'm going to say... I tried to...
Finally, somewhere for fear itself to shine.
Gotcha, yeah. But most disappointing. Because I think we all look forward to certain books, and let's talk about some of the stuff that didn't quite meet our hopes and dreams. And I guess, so for 2011, what was your most disappointing title? Which one that you'd been enjoying kind of just went downhill?
Justice League.
Went down?
I can't stand it.
The new one? Okay.
Yeah, it's the pacing is like an old episode of Super Friends has
exactly.
It's like, hi, I'm Aquaman. Nice to meet you. Hi, I'm Batman. It's like there's no anticipation or mystery as to who the villain is. Jim Lee will probably leave after 1 year.
Already did after seven.
I don't like the condensed 5-year timeline because the Justice League had a rich history. I'm sticking with the book simply to get the Shazam Captain Marvel backups.
So I would agree with you that it's a disappointing book if it didn't stink before the relaunch.
Mm. Yeah.
If it was good and became bad
before the relaunch, but I was expecting this to be
That's a good point.
DC answer to the Avengers.
Yeah. No, somebody else. I'm trying to think what was most disappointing. There was a lot.
I got one.
Okay, Nick, go.
I don't think anyone else is going to choose this either, but it makes sense for me. It's a 3-way tie. But really? For the same reason. Powers, Scarlet, and Brilliant.
Wait, because they didn't ship?
There's just nothing to talk about.
Yeah, I agree.
These are books that they put some hype into it, and nothing comes of it. And these are the kind of books that when Bendis is on, he's really on with. But they just come out so slowly, and these artists are also artists that I absolutely love, too. So... It's the combined. Unfortunately, it used to just be year after year. I was disappointed with the 2 issues of Powers I got, but now it's like he does 2 issues of Powers and he says, "Oh, I'm going to do a new miniseries," and then starts an issue of that, and he goes, "Oh, I'm going to do another miniseries," yeah. And starts an issue of that, and then the year's done.
Yeah, so, Brilliant One was intriguing, but now when number 2 comes out, I don't know if I'm going to care enough to try it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get it, but geez.
Yeah, and Scarlet came out in an expensive hardcover, and that's been it. So even people that waited weren't going to pay, the $29 for the 5-issue hardcover.
Did he put out a Powers issue?
Scarlet works, but you have to get...
An issue came out, I think, in March. Yeah. Okay. My favorite thing about the Powers was the current one that we're waiting for, I think he just mentioned it's being lettered. I ordered it in June of 2010. And it's like, it's just being lettered? You're not even trying at this point. And maybe he has too much on his plate, but then stop. And don't have me order this stuff if it's never coming.
It's moving at Kevin Smith-style pace.
Yeah. No, I agree with you completely there. 3 books that could do very well that are just dead.
Or just do 1 book really well. Yeah. I'm fine with that. But not 3 things you don't do.
Just do all original graphic novels for that. Do 2 Powers.
Yeah, agreed.
Because that's what I trade with all of that now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Scarlet would make a great graphic novel.
If it would come out in trade paperback, I'd recommend it more. But like you said, a $30 hardcover is hard to sell.
Yeah, if they release like a 160-page story 25. Once a year.
Okay. Sorry.
There's still only 5 issues.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Still high.
Yeah.
Can I go next?
No. Yeah,
all right. This may be surprising to frequent listeners or other guests, but my most disappointing title, one that I dropped due to poor work, was G.I. Joe Cobra Civil War.
What?
So,
wow.
Yeah, well, the reason it may be surprising is some of you may remember that I said G.I. Joe Cobra was some of the best stuff going during the first part of the year.
Yeah, okay. You had notes and everything.
Yeah, I know. Well, it was G.I. Joe Cobra was written at a level so far above anything that I ever expected from G.I. Joe. And the follow-up that spun out of it, G.I. Joe Cobra Civil War, was right about at the level of what one would expect from G.I. Joe. So, I mean, if you're into big explosions, big action, calling everybody by their code names, I mean, that's what it is.
It's, you realize you just described what G.I. Joe is, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
But G.I. Joe into Cobra. G.I. Joe because of G.I. Joe Cobra, which was very not G.I. Joe.
Yeah, it was the
he
story.
He got into that story yeah. about Chuckles and everything, which was totally different. Yeah. And then he was so hyped up for this, and he's like, oh, this is just what I thought it was.
Did yeah. you actually read this, or are you just talking about what you've heard?
Well, maybe he was listening to me.
I was listening to Joe.
Because you said Chuckles, which was, you know, you actually
I can named I've been talking about character. It long enough. Right. Anyway, that's my pick.
Don't you listen to Joe.
mine was, most disappointing title was, like, Green Lantern. Every time I think about getting into Green Lantern, and I love New Guardians. I don't even consider it a Lantern book anymore. I just consider it New Guardians. But regular Green Lantern just always seems to disappoint every time I think about getting into it. And I like Blackest Night. I thought that was great. And it was kind of centered around the Lantern universe. But then everything that followed up after it in the main title just didn't hold my interest. And then the new one just really went nowhere quickly. I mean, it was, okay, I'm not reading. I just decided immediately I'm not reading this.
It probably would have been wise for him to step away when he wrapped up Blackest Night because that was his big Green Lantern opus.
I mean, Blackest Night was great. I mean, Blackest Night was, I read it, I liked it, and then everything I've read except for New Guardians. But I don't even think of New Guardians, like, it's such a different spin on almost every other Lantern book. It's totally different.
It's everything
a Lantern book should be. And it's like, you know, off to the side, nobody really talks about
it. It's Kyle Rayner who no one wanted.
Yeah. And then the Lantern book that is supposed to be the big seller is the one that's not very good at all. So
are we allowed to pick a decision, or does it have to be like anything that happened in comics, or are we sticking to a book?
Here? You can.
Well, this is because you had two different ones. You had new title and then
new title would be a new book that came out that you were looking forward to that just totally.
Right. So my regular disappointing.
So just regular book.
My that regular title is
was good that went bad.
See, the two that I have, I really don't even know that I can say that I ever really thought they had a point where they were good. It was more, I was hoping they were good, and I wanted
fine,
them to be good.
Okay.
But it's a tie for me between Avengers and Thunderbolts.
Okay.
And even Secret Avengers is one that was good and plummeted. But really, those two, I've wanted Thunderbolts and Avengers to be good because I love the concept of Thunderbolts, and it's had its popularity, obviously. You know, it's a concept that will sell, but it at this point, you know, Luke Cage running around, you know, the stories have been...
Oh, okay. This time travel's awful.
Yeah, the time, like, it was...
The covers are awful.
It was...
You know, I when looked they launched, at them and I didn't even want
when
to
When they relaunched it in the Heroic Age, it started off pretty decently with Luke Cage mm-hmm. as this Dirty Dozen type of Suicide Squad-esque team, but, you know, and I won't even blame Fear Itself because it was starting to get stale even before Fear Itself. And then Avengers, I just, you know...
No, I agree.
If I didn't get so many books, you know, if I ever, you know, if my wife ever said, you know, you need to cut back to, like, 10, 15, 20 books or whatever... Like, those are the books that would just be the first to go, and I probably wouldn't miss them. But they should be so, they should be so much better
Hopefully
than
they'll
they
fix
are
that
right
when
now.
They fight the X-Men.
I cut Thunderbolts already.
Yeah.
I probably will after, I have this thing about finishing stories, so I'll probably finish the
that's
time.
That's a long arc.
I know.
Because I was going to stick it out, too, and
I'm hanging on with it.
Dan Degnan told me it was like a 10 or 11 issue arc. And
oh,
I was,
really?
The Thunderbolt story is going on now, and I'm just like, I can't.
Oh, I didn't know it was
that
big. I think
Luke Cage is on the way out, so maybe it'll be a big change.
I can't write. If they would change character lineup, I'd pick it back up. I'd try it again.
Yeah.
New Mutants, for example, I dropped, and then Admit Landing came on it, and I said, all right, I don't really care, but I like Admit Landing. So my biggest disappointment was, and I guess it's this book, they canceled Black Panther. I thought Black Panther was one of the best things Marvel did in 2011, and out of nowhere, they canceled it.
I think the problem is it was, I don't want to say mismarketed. They tried to do the Incredible Hercules, tag it on to Daredevil.
Yes.
And it didn't, I mean, it's not even a case of it didn't retain the Daredevil's audience. Daredevil's audience stopped at Shadowland. And I don't know if Black Panther fans jumped onto it
and
at that point because Shadowland it was such a weird.
Did it no favors.
No, it didn't do it any favors at all. And I just think nobody knew what to make of it. They didn't I don't want to say they didn't promote it. I don't know how they promoted it offhand, but there was no buzz behind it, and it just kind of drifted away.
Well, if you guys are looking for something good, pick up the trades, because it is definitely worth reading.
Yeah, okay. Black Panther versus Kingpin right now. I'm actually really excited with how it finishes. Yeah, I think the next issue is the last.
They're doing trades. Yeah, it's coming out now.
Yeah. What you got?
I have Invincible Iron Man. I really think that book, since it's restarted, it was doing fairly well for me. I thought the story was going pretty good, especially through Dark Reign and all that. But it might have been one of the books that Fear itself kind of killed off, but for me. But even a little bit before that, it kind of just, the story was just getting really, it was dragging. Especially right after Dark Reign, when he, you know, they're trying to get it, he doesn't have his memory anymore and all that, and he's trying to restart Resilient.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taking so long, and then with Fear itself, it jumping into Fear itself, it's even taking longer. And, you know, after a while, it was just like, I don't even remember what happened. I think that's one of the worst books that I've had that Fear itself did get into, that I just lost track of what was going on, mainly because it was already running slow.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. I think the alcoholic part they reintroduced is going to be good. And the issues where he takes Split Lip to the dwarf weapon guy.
Yeah, Mike.
When he takes Split Lip to the A, meaning that's just
right,
hilarious.
But then you had Stain, who was the bad guy at the beginning of this run, right. And now he's back. Well, and you have Mandarin, and he's back. It's like, can you get something new?
Iron Man doesn't have good villains. Other
make
than
a new
one.
You're Matt Fraction. Create a good bad guy.
They also delayed him for so long.
Yeah.
He started off at the beginning, and frankly, they haven't really completed the story that they were getting into. It's just a weird way of how, you know, they're really structuring the whole story. It just, all of a sudden, they had something going on, and now it's taking so long just to get back to that. But I think, as I said, it has a lot of stuff just getting in the way of it. So,
okay. My disappointing title was Thor. With the movie coming, and I'd really enjoyed Straczynski's run, I'd really enjoyed pretty much everything Thor, not being a big Thor guy. And then this year, it did that bizarre Fraction story with Pasquale Ferry, where the World Eaters or whatever, and then they launched the new Mighty Thor that reading the first issue didn't make sense because you didn't know when it took place. Was it before Fear itself? Was it after? The Fear itself stuff, the journey into mystery, I've totally lost any interest. And then when they announced Tanaris, I understand people are like, oh, it's a neat twist. I don't care. I've given up on all
things
Thor.
See, I would think that is disappointing, but I didn't have any expectations.
Mm. Well, I had expectations because of the movie, and I thought they were going to do, you know,
well,
here was their chance.
We saw how Captain America in the movie worked out.
Right, but I'm just saying,
and that relaunch
was last year, Thor was good, and I was really enjoying Thor, and then all of a sudden it just kind of totally went off the rails for me.
Anytime Thor gets involved in, like, an event, and Loki, and I get so confused automatically. I have no idea what's going on.
I guess that's what I loved about Straczynski's run, is because it was separate from everybody else,
yeah,
and it was telling its own story.
Sure. I think that's what really started out. That was a really good book when it started. And then I guess it was Fear itself that
killed everything.
I think that's started with Fear itself, didn't it?
It, not quite, but yeah. Or maybe the very, it may have started,
I think that's what we're seeing a lot of, though, with Marvel books, is we don't mind these books that kind of stay in their own track and path, and you don't seem to see that too much with it anymore. It keeps jumping on to other things. If it would stop doing that, I think a lot of people would be able to follow these stories fairly well if they just had their own books.
Let a book develop away from the event.
Yeah.
You know what book but Fear Itself really killed was Iron Man 2.0. The Palmer Adley story is pretty good. But you went 5 issues into it, they made some pseudo cliffhanger so they could do 2 or 3 really bad Fear Itself tie-ins, and then they go back to finish it once it's already canceled. So why bother reading the end of it?
Well, you know, and I think a lot of people saw that, too, because it was jumping into Fear Itself. I don't think it automatically jumped that people knew it before it even started.
I mean, it really, that book was, I hated the art, but it was a good story, and then...
Who was the artist on it?
Ariel Olivetti. Yes.
Ah, okay.
That's Elio Alberti. Sorry.
what?
Let me get Sean Sisson. Most of this one was Thor and Fables. Thor has not been what I expect from a book about Norse gods. The art is too modern for Viking gods, and the writing reminds me of a space opera. Fables, it's not a terrible book, but it hasn't been able to regain the level of story I've come to expect from this title since the Fable War ended. The whole Mr. Dark storyline drug on and ended so abruptly it was startling. Ryan's most disappointing was Batman Volume 1. Tony Daniel really seemed to have a bigger story building, but got derailed by Flashpoint. So, Sean Wheatley, I don't think you chimed in.
Now, for me, the biggest disappointment was Heroes for Hire. That was one of my favorite books in the 70s. Not to date myself, and I was actually looking forward to that book coming back. I got a little worn out of the whole, earpieces, calling people in. Paladin didn't really do a whole lot for me over the course of that series.
Did you say Aladdin?
Paladin, but it's Paladin.
Okay.
But yeah.
Paladin, Paladin. Whatever.
That's okay.
If it was a little more interesting, maybe I'd get his name right.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was looking forward to that, especially because it was Abnett and Lanning, and after issue 2 with Puppet Master, I just went, I don't care. This doesn't make sense to me, and I just passed on the rest of it.
I thought the art was amazing, but I was like, you know, they put so much effort into the art, but not really that much into the story.
Yeah.
Who's the artist on that one?
Don't remember.
No clue.
It was He's good. Awesome.
I thought you were asking it like you usually do, okay. And then you were going to come in with it and be like... It was Giuseppe Kevin Coleman.
No, I would have known Giuseppe.
I'm going to go research that.
Okay, now the next category is most disappointing new title, and what I mean is a new book that came out this year that you had high hopes for and that really stunk. I'll start on this one. Mine was Cap. I was excited about the new Captain America book. I really like McNiven, Brubaker, tying in, you know, a movie. Let's see where this goes. And that first issue was so confusing and... Even that whole first story arc, I don't want to read about Cap going into another dimension where he's riding an elephant. That's not Captain America to me, and I don't think that was a good introduction to the people who saw the movie. Here you go. Here's Captain America number one, and it was just baffling.
Cap and Bucky was a good introduction for people who saw the movie.
Yeah, but it was they're going to look at a one. 22. Exactly, yeah.
Oh, no, but...
But yeah. that was just my most disappointing. And reading the end of the story arc, like I said, the fact that they changed artists midway through the issue and then went back to the original artist, and then in the course of a page change, they switched back, and you were supposed to notice that Cap had changed, but because of the drastic art difference, you noticed more the drastic art difference than the change. I just think that one just really went down, and it's dropping quickly, sadly.
There's going to be good art coming forward. With Alan Davis.
Yeah, the Alan Davis issue was very nice, and now it's shipping weekly. So,
there wasn't one this week, was it?
No, there's one next week, though.
Oh, Colin.
That'll be 3 in 3 weeks. Yes!
Heroes for Hire started out with Robert Atkins, who did some G.I. Joe elsewhere, and it ended with Kyle Hotz, who made his name doing the Hood miniseries with Brian Avon.
He didn't make his name because I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
Haven't you ever read The Hood?
I have.
Get on that. The first Marvel Max miniseries. It's classic.
No, it's not.
Actually, an interesting fact is
The Hood is good, but I'm saying the first Marvel Max miniseries wasn't The Hood; it was Alias.
Okay, yeah. I bet the Hood's going to be the bad guy in AVX. We haven't seen him for a while.
The Hood is called Luke Cage, you know.
I want Hood versus Hawkeye. That's what I want.
They're the same person.
That comes out like next week.
Okay, Jeremy, most disappointing new title.
Savage Hawkman.
I'll give you that.
No doubt there. I love DC's B-list villains. Most of them, you know, are lumped in with, like, Satellite Era, Justice League, you know, Atom, Aquaman, Green Arrow, Hawkman. And I was so excited with the new 52, the fact that, you know, Aquaman had a book, Firestorm had a book, Hawkman had a book. If they'd given Atom a book, I would have been... doing, you know,
Frankenstein.
Yeah, but I read the first issue and it's just bad. I wish it would be better. I'm still gonna read it because I'm still gonna buy it because at least they're making a Hawkman book and I can hope that, you know, if I continue to buy it, it might get better.
But if you keep buying it,
I know
they might not change it because they think people are liking it.
That's the Pittsburgh Pirates mentality.
But
But so how do you vote with your wallet again?
I know.
Well, I think Jeremy's saying is he'd rather there be a book
a bad Hawkman book, yeah, than not have a Hawkman book at
any
all.
Any Hawkman I can get.
So you're a big Hawkman fan?
I am.
I have a Hawkman tattoo.
Very cool.
You have an everything tattoo. Come on now.
You collect tattoos.
And I only kind of like them.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it's just strange. And it's not even, in this case, it's not even an origin thing, which has always been Hawkman's thing to get past. It's just not good.
Okay. Jim?
The FF book that they relaunched or launched after the death of Johnny Storm. I got the first issue. I was excited about Spider-Man being a member because it made sense with Johnny Storm's will take my place on the team, and I was on board. The black and white suit, the first couple issues with Dr. Doom and all the bad guys kind of brainstorming with Reed, and then somewhere along, like I think it was issue 6 or 7, it just got lost in some kind of inhuman story.
Yeah, that's when I stopped reading too.
Dropped it.
I think mine's a tie.
Okay.
Justice League International and Superman.
See, I like Superman.
JLI is getting better, but it is nothing.
JLI is mine. JLI is a book I wanted to like, and that just after the first one, I was like, well.
JLI is my number two.
I don't have to read this anymore. This is something I cannot worry about.
I think DC brought that book out too soon.
It just did not have anything
JLI.
I
not a friend of the podcast.
Anticipated.
It's getting better, but it needs time to build that character, you know. And if you've read the older stuff, the older stuff's so fun, and it starts off very lighthearted. You really start liking the characters, where this is just lacks character development. And the Superman thing is it's so dense.
I mean, yeah, it is. I like that.
See, I've noticed a trend is I don't think artists who become writers are good at expressing themselves in words, because they're always very wordy and very dense writers.
It reads like a Golden Age book.
Yeah.
And it like the, if someone right,
Superman.
Yeah, Superman. Not Justice League, not JLI. JLI is modern day, but Superman reads like old time comic book. There's so much writing. I'm reading that Spider-Man backstory in Siege Prelude, and I'm like, what is this? Is this a novel? Like, there's so much. There's like a picture of like an inch in text everywhere. I'm just, oh.
Are you sure you're not reading the Marvel Spotlight stuff? Because there is Marvel Spotlight in the back of that.
Nope, it's still the issue. Okay.
Nick, well, I want to know what your number one is.
It's so forgettable that you probably forgot about it.
Brilliant.
Ultimate X.
Oh, okay.
Does that count for 2011? Because it came out. That's like
2009 and 2010 and 2011 for 5 issues.
Yeah, so think about that. 2 years worth of lead up to that.
Yeah.
Just the everything Ultimate X-Men has been terrible.
Yeah.
Ultimate X, leaning into Ultimate X-Men, it's just...
Yeah,
this... Like, I have no idea. Like, it's the Hulk and Human Torch and Mutants Aren't Mutants, and the book has zero... I guess both books, whatever. The whole thing has zero direction, and it just sort of seems like a cash grab. Yeah. And you know, it goes from one writer to the next trying to figure out what to do with this, and they're left with the crap, you know, that they inherited. And, I mean, if you look at all the names of the people that are involved with Ultimate X and the current Ultimate X-Men, those are some big-name creators, and it's some of their worst stuff.
Yeah, the relaunch on that line has not been looked upon favorably. I think single digits.
I'm the only one that likes Ultimate Spider-Man, but it's approachable.
Joe F.
I'm going to go with the Rob Williams takeover of Deken Dark Wolverine.
You don't have to worry. It's over.
Yeah. You know, I was disappointed when I heard that it was canceled. Then I bought the next collected edition, read it, and was really disappointed with how Rob Williams removed the subtlety about Deken's sexuality and went towards like a club designer drug storyline where he loses his healing factor. It just fell flat for me.
Okay. Sean.
You know how to cancel a Marvel book, don't you?
Yeah.
Let Rob Williams write it.
Yeah.
Sean Wheatley. Okay, Adam.
My biggest disappointment was Red Hood and the Outlaws. Not necessarily just because I've heard good things after the first issue, but it just really wasn't my what I really thought they were trying to do with Jason Todd and his character. I liked what they were doing with him before the New 52, then after putting him on this team. It just doesn't fit. Like, I thought he was a really powerful character. He was a Robin that comes back angry, incredibly angry at Bruce. And I think he just had so much potential as, you know, as a Robin becoming a villain is not something, you know, that you saw. And I thought he had just a lot of potential as that character that they could have done something more with him. And then throwing him onto this team, I just can't get into it. I don't know. It just doesn't fit him. I don't feel like it does. Okay. So.
Well, Ryan Sargent's right along with you guys. His most disappointing was Red Hood and the Outlaws and Justice League International. Sean's most disappointing were Cap and Flash. He said Cap has been disappointing since number one. The book right now just isn't in Brubaker's comfort zone, and it shows. Too many big ideas from a writer whose work is in the down-to-earth noir genre. And Flash, like Fables, is not a terrible book, but has done the opposite of what DC talked about before the relaunch. It's taken a grounded character and made him less accessible, made him more powerful. The art's amazing, but the story just missed all the best things I liked about Flash. Mob Rule is a type of villain I never liked. So.
And I am here, Colin.
Oh, okay.
Like I said, it takes me a second
to
find that, to turn off the mute button.
Fine. What you got?
My biggest disappointment for last year, was Fear Itself.
Oh, we're getting there. We're getting there.
That was my jumping off point for the main Marvel books. I've been following all the events year after year, and I even got all of them, most of the miniseries for Fear Itself up until, like I said, I was all into it. I was
Fearsome Four.
I just felt the ending was left me so PO'd at all the money I had spent on all the other books just to see Thor die again.
No, but he didn't.
And then the other piece was the thing that you guys brought to my attention was, oh, Fear Itself didn't end with the last issue. You need to get these point one, point two, point three. And then I was like, okay, I'm totally done with this now. Because if it was supposed to be three more issues, why didn't they just make it three more issues?
It's almost like they tried to annoy us.
Yeah.
It's almost like they don't know what they're doing. And they're like, you know what? We need more.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to be done. Just put a point on it.
It's like they can't plan it.
We didn't lie. It was a 7-issue miniseries.
There's a lot of things you can do with a point.
That's right. Okay. Let's keep moving. Least favorite character. Who out there that you just don't like right now?
I got one. Hal Jordan.
What? I really... Cooper.
Curly Cooper.
Oh, Curly Cooper, yeah. I'll do that. I'll talk about Hal Jordan first. Hal Jordan, I really think they just, for this whole New 52 thing, he's like the most blah character that they've had in this whole thing. Like, they're not doing anything really with his character at all. Like, everybody's had something that they're changing. Wonder Woman, you know, they changed her whole backstory in a way for this. Batman has a lot going on, but even Aquaman has a lot going on, but Hal Jordan has absolutely nothing besides what they left us with before the New 52. So I really think he was kind of a disappointment, but yeah, I just don't like Curly Cooper at all in Spider-Man.
Only thing I liked about it is she showed up in Punisher, which I thought was a really neat twist, just showing that the police department does more than just Spider-Man. And she showed up in an issue with Punisher.
I'm with Adam. Hal Jordan has just been, he's just somebody who's just lost. No, there's no reason to care about him. And my other character that I just don't like, and it's just totally, I just don't like him from the looks of him, from what Marvel does with him. I've never read a book with him in it. I don't know one single bit of thing about him. I just don't like Deadpool.
Hey, that's what I was going to say.
I just don't like him.
I'm on the Deadpool hate wagon too, so you're not alone.
Yeah.
Let's just take a vote. Who all hates Deadpool here?
I've never read a book with him. I just don't like him.
I read X-Force with him, and he's okay, but yeah, I'm with you. He's still overexposed, and I've never been able to figure out why.
I was thinking that same thing the other day. The Deadpool, he's not a bad character, but he's one of those characters that when he just comes into a book, and, you know, there's some reason why he just... But having his own books, and he doesn't only just have one book, he has to have, like, a bunch of them.
Well, I was going to say, if outside the Max universe, yeah, I can't stand them. But the Max book is not even a Deadpool book.
And
it's just a...
And
the
even, Max books are and not even, even anything. They're just fun books. I mean,
I can honestly say this, and I don't mean to hate it in a say it in a hating way, because if you, he's your favorite character, great. But the people who love Deadpool have never been able to show me anything about the character that would even make me to pique my interest to find out if I just.
I read something interesting about Deadpool over the weekend. Rob Liefeld created him as a Deathstroke ripoff, and Slade Wilson and Wade Wilson were intentionally similar. Real life
names.
You
read the same thing I read about him possibly taking over Deathstroke.
Yeah.
Which may cause me, will definitely cause me to drop Deathstroke and maybe more DC books.
Is he going to write it, or is he going to write it and draw it?
Doesn't matter. You take Kyle Higgins off that book, who's one of the best new writers they have.
Is that your retaliation? You're just going to drop, like, a bunch of books, though? Just because of that?
Well, you said you were going to drop all the Marvel books if...
No, that changes a lot. That shows that Marvel is trying to sell more towards their movies. They're changing what I'm reading just because they're trying to sell me a movie. Mm-hmm. That's selling out.
They didn't redo that with relaunching Iron Man 4 and Captain America within months of the movies?
That's what I'm saying. They're selling out. I agree totally.
While we're on the subject of Marvel selling out, it is a terrible idea to put Bucky back to the Winter Soldier. He had a great resurrection and a great progression from Bucky into Captain America and Steve Rogers into the Nick Fury role. And then to lose Bucky as Cap and to lose that Alex Ross designed suit, big mistake.
I'm kind of glad the suit's gone.
Oh, to each his own.
Mine is a tie with Squirrel Girl and or Thor Girl. I don't get either one of those characters. The Thor Girl, because she played a role in some of the miniseries as far as Fear itself. I don't understand that character, why we need her, what she does, what her purpose is. And the same with Squirrel Girl. God, of all the animals in the world to model...
Well, she was a joke from the Great Lakes Avengers. She was originally created as a joke, like the Legion of Substitute event.
Yeah, I can understand Thor Girl, but Squirrel Girl?
Yeah.
I mean...
Jim,
what do you got?
The best story here.
Disappointing character, Green Arrow, because at one time he was one of my favorites. Bill Gates with a bow doesn't do it for me. DC
lost Tony Stark with a bow.
No, Q Corps.
Steve Jobs.
Yes.
Bill Gates.
Yeah, it's Bill Gates.
Yeah, DC lost their way with the character.
What do you have, Nick?
A long time ago.
This was easy for me. That's the Serpent. I mean, he's the big bad of a year's worth of stories. And what do we know about him?
Nothing.
What's his motivation? I don't know.
How did they beat him?
I don't know.
No, still not sure.
Prophecy.
They kind of hid that panel from us.
Colin.
My disappointment is Hawkeye, only in the sense of he's in every book. I realize he's in the new movie that's coming up, but he doesn't need to be in every single book. I mean, when you see him, he's popping up in Cap, Ghost Rider.
You're making it sound like
Hawkeye's
you're
the
making
new Deadpool.
It sound like Marvel's selling out.
No, I'm not saying they're selling out. I'm just he's an interesting niche character, but he's in every Avengers book, and that's why I was joking, saying they're going to make him a mutant so he can be in every X book too. It's just enough's enough. Every time I turn a page, and there he is.
But that's his only reason for being there, though.
But let him be in Avengers.
Well, I agree.
And just stay there. But yeah, when he was on the cover of Ghost Rider, I'm just like, you got to be kidding me.
So,
that's my least favorite. Nothing against the guy, just overexposure. Let's see. Ryan, Booster Gold. He misses the time-traveling Braggart and also Wally West, and he's hoping he returns. Sean Sisson does not like Mr. Terrific at all.
anybody JRJR draws.
Fair enough. Okay.
Especially the boy version of Maria.
Let's wrap this up. Least favorite miniseries and event, and I'm going to say there might be a consensus on this. But
just say anyone not picking Fear Itself.
Anybody not picking Fear Itself, what do you have? And
I went with, my initial thought was, nothing really disappointed me. And I did not read Fear Itself like you guys did.
Okay.
And I did not read it all in over the course of 7 months. And I do not read any Marvel monthlies. So I did not have the same negative feeling that you guys had, which is all valid points, and I can totally understand it. Because it didn't really go anywhere, and didn't really do much. But if you just spent 2 hours one afternoon reading them all, it was an okay story. Okay. It kind of got you somewhere, and it wasn't bad. So I wasn't really totally disappointed with anything, miniseries-wise.
So you have nothing?
I got nothing.
Okay.
All
right. Anybody online?
Good job, Marvel. DC?
No, I think Fear Itself.
Okay.
Why don't we all just all at once?
Yeah, I think we over the last few podcasts have definitely talked about it.
Any of the Fear Itself tie-ins. Fear Itself wasn't bad.
That count?
Fear Itself wasn't bad, but
anything close to Fear Itself, buy it next to it.
Fear Itself, Fearsome Four, Namor, Deadpool,
Avengers, New Avengers, Secret Avengers.
Can you name them all?
You know.
Thing is, compared to Flashpoint, though, I don't think there's anything with Flashpoint that you can really say that you just didn't get into it.
Like, some of the a lot of people didn't like the Secret Seven. They didn't understand
the movies were the only thing that really
it wasn't bad.
But as a story, I didn't think it was.
I think the problem with Fear Itself was all the build up, all the hype, all the spouting. It's this is huge, and it ended with such a disappointment.
And how they built the story.
Yeah, and then the fact and these point one issues that kind of completely undid any emotional or important moments.
Yeah, that was kind of
from
bad.
The whole series. What?
The first point one was good.
I love 7.1.
7.1 was good.
I understand, but that was the big thing. Yeah, Breivort saying, we have a major death. Bucky's dead. You know, this is going to have major repercussions on the Marvel Universe. And then they come out and say, oh, it was a life model decoy.
But nobody really knows it.
I mean, 7.1 was a good issue. 7.2 was selling me stuff. 7.3 was selling me more stuff. Yeah.
7.1 was in the top 10 issues of 2011 for me. Okay.
I read it, but I was so disappointed when I read it.
Are you going Big Shrimpin' now or what?
No, I gotta.
You look like.
Well, that's okay. We're wrapping up. I gotta get home. I'm in trouble again. But so I don't know what we're gonna talk about next week. We'll come up with something online. We haven't done previews. Fair enough. We'll probably do previews next week.
Previews.
And anything that comes up over this next week, hopefully we get some news. I haven't seen a whole lot of interesting stuff other than Rich Johnson having to take down Watchmen images.
We'll do a whole podcast about the Lead Statue magazine.
Oh, there we go, according to Warren Ellis, who hates them. But we'll talk to you next week. See ya.
Faster than a bullet, leaping buildings in a single bound. Came from out the shadows, cause that's how we get down. I'm in your town. Walk between billionaires and evil scientists. Sorcerer supreme, all the teenagers are buying this. Gamma radiation, nobody could mess with this. Hold steady with venomous symbiotes in my penmanship. Your friendly neighborhood MC back on the scene. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry, all I'm seeing is green and red and blue. I hold the shield for America, when a soldier out Siberia. Rocking any microphone that's near to ya. Clobbering it till in the coffin you sit. Agenda for extinction, bring out the horsemen of the apocalypse. Part of an evil brotherhood, acolytes that believe. Super friends who make beats and cats that MC. It's the area code to the planet that we protect. The Infinity Watch is now back in effect. Now, put your hands up like this. For all the vigilantes in the streets taking a risk. For all the heroes undercover ducking, pressing the pigs. For all the villains that he's scheming on that doomsday tip. That's how we do it. Superpowered MC who can spit. That's how we do it. Superhuman on these tracks that I flip. Yeah, cause you ain't seen it quite like this.
Because
that's how we do it in the 616. My ruby quartz shades and my colored rings. Laser scope rifles ain't concerned with them other things. These rappers wanna talk about ice chains and fancy cars. Me, I'm trying to build a mansion in Asgard. And fund the Hellfire Society. Studio is Cerebro. Mind patterns and rhyme, cause I rap about what I feel though. You hear the rhythm and you're hearing the track. I'm here to take it back to days of future past in my rap. I'm the Stan Lee of the streets. Demand things when I speak like your attention and respect when I jam these in the beats. And my tape deck pops, my mixtapes still rock. They're in your system, that's what Soundwave's telling me on the block. Ricky Bobby Drake's the only ice that I rock with. And mental telepathy is the only style that I talk with. Close your eyes, you can listen up in your mind. During this song, been freestyling there the whole time.
Now, put your hands up like this. For all the vigilantes in the streets taking a risk. For all the heroes undercover ducking, pressing the pigs. For all the villains that he's scheming on that doomsday tip. That's how we do it. Superpowered MC who can spit. That's how we do it. Superhuman on these tracks that I flip. Yeah, cause you ain't seen it quite like this.
Because
that's how we do it in the 616.
Drop the beat out. I'm gonna go Pietro on these cats. Right? Yeah.
spitting a rhythm that nobody's getting. I'm down to the infinite watches, the wisdom will baffle these women and children. I'm ripping tracks, I go Mark 5 with a power pack. Hawkeye, what I'm aiming at. Stop time, watch your chain react. Can't lie, I'm a brainiac. Little they know, I'm stealing the show. I'm filling the streets, unlimited flow. The second of Doc Ock, when I'm killing it, yo, please. Shots to your chest, you're rocking a mess like Cable did. I'm hungry as Wally West at a kitchen table. Nobody will save you, kid. I'm Frank with a gun, I'm Hank with his son. I'm love when I skip lunch, eating rappers, man, so thanks for the gum. I'm Stark's wallet back before all these banks had a run. I'm Lex Luthor when I rap, I'm trying to blank out the sun. Cause all I see are friendly faces and shifty eyes. Keeping these anonymous commenters honest, making them realize. You love to hate me on the net when I try. That's why you get no love when you're up on my block. Now, put your hands up like this. For all the vigilantes in the streets taking a risk. For all the heroes undercover ducking press in the pigs. For all the villains steady steaming on that doomsday tip.